Yes, today we'll finally learn New York's state of mind. President Obama will find anxious allies on his visit to Europe and the Gulf, and the ceasefire in Syria begins to unravel, plus the precedent of impeachment. Those are just some of the stories that news analyst Neil Conan has on his mind. He joins us now, as he does most Tuesdays, from his Macnut farm on the Big Island. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning to you, Beth, and congratulations to everybody, especially the listeners, on the end of the pledge drive. Nice to get back to normal.
Oh, you bet it is. Although, I'll tell you, it's a little bittersweet this time around, too. Okay, so New Yorkers are voting in the state's primary today. The front runners in both parties have had kind of a tough time of it as of late. Is this the week that changes?
Yes, certainly for Donald Trump. The question for him is, will he get all or nearly all of New York's Republican delegates? And almost certainly for Hillary Clinton, her margin of victory will be much smaller than Trump's, but likely more lethal.
Now, wait a second, though. Hasn't Bernie Sanders won 8 of the last 9?
Yes, but that, I think, ends today. 7 of those 8 Sanders victories were in caucuses, not in primaries. Independents can't vote in New York. It's a much more diverse state than the states that Sanders has won in primaries. And the opinion polls give Secretary Clinton a double-digit lead. I think the best Sanders can probably do is a moral victory if he can get within 5 points or so. But every time Secretary Clinton increases her already formidable lead, even by a little, she makes the hill even steeper for him to climb, and the clock is ticking.
And if those same polls that you mentioned are to be believed, Donald Trump is going to get his biggest win yet.
New York is his home field as well. The demographics there do not favor either Ted Cruz or John Kasich. And if Trump can break the 50% barrier for the first time, and he gets about 55 or so in the polls, there's a decent chance he could win all of the delegates in New York, or maybe all but a handful. That should break whatever momentum Ted Cruz developed, and next week sets up well for Trump again. It is absolutely crucial for him to get to 1237. That's the number of delegates needed to win on the first ballot, because it is ever more clear that many, many delegates to the Republican National Convention will not vote for him if they're freed of their pledge.
Okay, well, for a moment, let's just turn to our current president, who leaves today for meetings in Europe and in the Persian Gulf. Two sets of allies, two sets of problems, maybe?
The European Union faces very real threats, internal threats, between the British vote on membership, which comes up in June, the right-wing nationalists who've taken power in places like Poland and Hungary. There is external pressure from Russia, and the volume of migrants who are trying to get into Europe. Europe is trying to come to terms with the weaknesses of its own structure. There is no central authority to respond to terrorism, as we saw in Paris and Brussels. No central authority to set a single policy on migrants. More broadly, no central authority to harness the enormous political and economic power of the EU.
Can you give me an example of how that might manifest?
Sure. The migrant deal with Turkey. Basically, the EU is paying Turkey off to stop the flow of migrants across the Aegean. There are still terrible problems with tens of thousands of migrants who are trapped in Greece, but there are signs that the migrants have gotten the word that they face deportation if they go to Greece, so the flow of the boats to islands like Lesbos is slowing.
So it would appear that that's working.
Maybe. But the payoff to Turkey is not just monetary. I mean, Europe could afford the 6 billion euros. It's political, too. Turkey's government is increasingly authoritarian. President Erdogan is notoriously thin-skinned. He's suppressed newspapers in Turkey that criticize him, which is bad enough. But now he's suing a satirist in Germany who read a deliberately offensive, deliberately provocative poem about him on German TV. And Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, needs Turkish help on the migrants so badly right now that she's allowing this lawsuit to go ahead. And that's at the sacrifice, her many critics say, of free speech in Germany, which is obviously an important principle. And by the way, while the flow of migrants from Turkey across the Aegean is slowing, the route has shifted to Libya, and more boats are headed across the Mediterranean to Italy.
And from that set of problems, let's go to this, too. President Obama is going to Saudi Arabia and is going to be meeting with smaller Gulf states as well. Didn't the president just call them, free riders, countries that depend on the U.S. military but don't spend enough on their own defense? I mean, what's up with this?
Yes, he did. Europe, too, for that matter. But this is especially infuriating to the Saudis, who think the U.S. Sold them out in the nuclear deal with Iran and think the United States is not helping them enough in the war in Yemen, which they see as a proxy war with Iran. Now, the U.S. does want more help against ISIS in Iraq and Syria. That war has gotten a little better of late, but Saudi Arabia and its Gulf allies can't help there as long as they're tied up in Yemen, and that's a war that's not going so well.
Let's talk, let's at least talk a little bit more about oil, for example, that's happening there, that we know this is a big issue. But I wanted to get quickly to Syria, too. 2 months of partial ceasefire, a couple of weeks of negotiations in Geneva. Now it looks like the fighting is starting up again. I mean, this thing looks like it's about ready to blow up in our faces.
Yeah, it sure does. Government forces backed by Russia, the touted Russian withdrawal from Syria, turned out to be pretty much of a fabrication. So the government forces are backed by Russia and Iran. They're fighting much more around Aleppo, where they see opportunities against rebel forces. Other rebel forces are trying to put pressure on the heartland of government supporters near the Mediterranean coast in the port of Latakia. This is not quite out of control yet, but the talks are losing steam, too, and it sure does not look good.
Finally, I want you to talk a little bit about the vote in Brazil this week to impeach President Dilma Rousseff.
And on very flimsy grounds, too. But, you know, it's a mistake to think about this as, you know, some sort of judicial process. The actual charge against her is that she deliberately misrepresented the economic numbers prior to the last election, made them look better than they actually were. Now, this is not corruption. There's no accusation she's tried to enrich herself. This is not an abuse of power like, you know, Watergate. Her real crime is political. Brazil's economy is in a deep recession. Millions of jobs have been lost. Her popularity is down in single digits. Now, there is a lot of corruption in Brazil, a huge case involving the government-owned oil company, so people are angry. They want somebody to blame. So an impeachment process that was once, you know, sort of, you know, abstract, a distant prospect, very difficult to do in Brazil, well, now it looks like it's going to happen.
Her supporters, of course, are calling it a constitutional coup. They say that this is an effort to undermine a democratically elected government.
And they have a point. And I think we need to look to our own history here. You know, I mentioned Watergate a minute ago. Richard Nixon resigned before he could be impeached. There was an impeachment case to be made against President Reagan in the Iran-Contra scandal, but Democrats pretty well decided not to pursue it, in part because nobody wanted to normalize impeachment as part of the American political, you know, system. Obviously, that did not stop the impeachment of President Clinton. 10 years later, he survived a trial in the Senate. And I bring this up because I've already read articles, serious articles, about the impeachment of President Trump.
Oh, my.
Yes, it's amazing. It comes up before he's won the nomination, much less the presidency, and, of course, before he could possibly commit high crimes and misdemeanors. And there are some Republicans who have spoken openly about the impeachment of a second President Clinton, Hillary Clinton, before she's ever been elected. Now, this is, you know, fringe stuff so far. But we need to remember that impeachment is a doomsday weapon, which is what we're seeing in Brazil. The country's tearing itself apart. And as polarized and dysfunctional as our politics are now, it's a reminder that things can get much worse.
As they say, it can always get worse. And, well, I guess on that cheery thought, we're going to leave it for this week. Neil, thanks so much.
Hey, it's not all doom and gloom. The pledge drive.
Yeah, there's always a silver lining. Thanks so much. Talk to you next week. News analyst Neil Conan joins us most Tuesdays from the farm. And you can also hear his specific news minutes right here on Hawaii Public Radio.